This is Maurice Jones-Drew, and you're listening to the What's Brewing Show.
Hello, and welcome to What's Brewing. I'm your host, Jake Merrifield, and I'm coming to you live from a parking lot in Palmdale, California, where I woke up at 6 a.m. Thank goodness we had that daylight saving time. Gained us an hour. And drove up here for a softball tournament, kind of a camp slash friendly exhibition, where supposedly Rachel Garcia and Bubba Nichols are supposed to be up here at some point, but I'm up here for my daughter, and just meeting those two wonderful ladies that would be a bonus to today. But that's why I did not get a post came in last night, and I apologize for that, because you know, I got home and then quickly decided to go to sleep because I had to wake up to come to this. But with that being said, I'm joining you mere hours after UCLA's third straight win, 10 points or more. It's just a beautiful thing. And certainly when we were looking at UCLA season at 1-5, coming off of just a depressing, horrible loss to Arizona, and then a game against Oregon State where they, you know, spotted Oregon State 21 points, and it really was as worse as it could ever be. And once again, my post game at that point was the backwards record, Chip Kelly's the devil. I don't think any of us really imagined that they would get it swung around like they have. And, who knows? Are they still just kind of a mediocre team that's taken advantage of some even worse teams? Or have they spun around to where they're actually kind of sort of good? I think that this win against Colorado, even though Colorado is absolutely, you know, in a tailspin, they're in the same tailspin the Bruins were earlier in the year. They're in the same tailspin that they were in last year before they fired Mike McIntyre. There are certainly a lot more things about this Colorado team, things that they've shown they could do this year, that, you know, when UCLA comes in for a third consecutive week and shows a lot of results on the defensive end, that, you know, now it's kind of hard to say that it's a fluke over and over and over again. Now, certainly we'll look at the next game they have against the Utah Utes in Utah. And, you know, it's one of those things where that game, you know, depending on how everybody thinks it's going to go, you know, if it goes as everybody thinks it's going to go, that probably won't exactly be illustrative of, you know, of how good the Bruins are, right? They're probably better than they'll look in Utah, possibly. And I think they do have a chance to make a game of it in Utah, but if things go how everybody thinks it's going to go, you know, certainly they're not as bad as how supposedly they're going to look there. I don't know if that made any sense. But I think now, after three games where we said, you know, after the Stanford game, well, they're playing as the guy who never played quarterback before and was absolutely terrible, and so of course the defense is going to look good. They, you know, how could they not look good? And then last week, versus Arizona State, you know, coming off of that, Arizona State coming off the beatdown to Utah, you could still, you know, you give them a little more credit for being able to do it against an Arizona State team that certainly had been better earlier in the year, but, you know, you're really wondering, you know, how much credit do they get because it's still a freshman quarterback. Well, now they took on Colorado and Steven Montez, and even though Montez had looked brutal a couple weeks ago in back-to-back games, against USC, Colorado was able to get some stuff offensively done, and, you know, even though they choked that game away late, you still figured that they were going to give the Bruin defense at least a test, even if the Bruin offense is going to be able to kind of outpace that bad Colorado defense. And it was really kind of weird in that, you know, we talked about that Oregon State game a couple weeks ago, the Bruins spot the Beavs 21 points. Well, this is kind of like the reverse game at the Rose Bowl. At least that's what it felt like to me. You know, it felt like before we even got down in our seats, the Bruins were up 17-0. And they came out and just absolutely dominated the first quarter in such a way that it really just took the air right out of the sails of the Buffaloes pretty early. And they didn't really show too many signs of life until, you know, late in the game. And, you know, overall, UCLA was able to respond every time the Buffaloes did score, you know, came back with a nice touchdown. And so they never really were even threatened at any point during this game, winning at 31-14. And that first quarter was just so impressive. I mean, they talk about this new, or not new, but Chip Kelly's envisioning of possessing the ball, not just, you know, having it and scoring very quickly necessarily, having these long drives. Well, the Bruins in that first quarter, they possessed the ball, you know, 10 minutes to Colorado's five, and they had, you know, and in large part that was because of the defense. It was such a great effort by the defense. I want to say that Colorado had three and outs in their first three drives, and then the fourth drive was like a four-play drive as well, you know, with a punt. I think there was a turnover in there somewhere, right? You know, one of those, of course, ended with Chris Barnes' interception. And then coming off of that, UCLA capitalized with not a ball control drive, just that beautiful deep shot to Fournier. You know, 2 weeks in a row, the kid with the walk on number, you know, with the honorary, you know, 36 after Pasquale, gets a beautiful touchdown catch. So that couldn't have gone any better than planned. And you know, before you know it, it's 17-0, and the Bruins are in good shape. And yeah, I mean, Colorado ended up getting that score on, I think, their fifth drive, making it 17-7. And then, you know, at that point, kind of like the action kind of stalled kind of the rest of the game. I was listening to the radio broadcast a little bit, and that, you know, they were kind of saying that as well, that, you know, after they got up 17-0, then the offense was kind of having it was a little more herky-jerky. But in the second half, they came out, and even though Colorado ended up stopping them on that first drive, you know, the defense held firm, and then they were able to make it 24-7 before, you know, Colorado was able to put anything together. And then eventually, you know, even they got the 24-14, then, you know, Josh Kelly with that beautiful put-away run, well, like a 35-yard touchdown run, that just was kind of everything they needed. So even though it wasn't the prettiest win, it was a comfortable win. It was a beautiful night out at the Rose Bowl. Still, there weren't a ton of fans there. I mean, maybe 45,000-50,000 at the very, very most. I don't think it was that much. I didn't get to see the attendance, and my laptop is not working out here in the Palmdale Desert for some reason, so I can't look that up. So I apologize. I'm going a little bit off the top of my head on some of this. But it was just a beautiful night at the Rose Bowl. Yours truly actually met up with one William Henry Shirley III and the lovely Suzanne and the two twins at halftime, and they came and sat in my section watching the end of the game, and that was a good old time. And for the record, the Shirleys did leave earlier than me. They always give me shit about leaving games early, but I stayed much later than they did because they had to get to their little fancy tailgate party to clean up their mess. The halftime show, best halftime show of the year by far. They honored the armed forces, and the band did a bunch of cool configurations where they turned themselves into a tank, turned themselves into a plane, and they finished off with a wonderful giant field covering American flag, and just a wonderful performance by a young lady from the band singing God Bless America. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful moment. So we honored all the service men and women out there. That was really cool too. Like I said, just a nice, comfortable win for the Bruins. Josh Kelly, third week in a row, just absolutely the key to the Bruin offense as far as churning out yards, couple big plays, and just Mr. Reliable. Martell Irby got in there again towards the end, which is good. You saw Kaz Allen get mixed in again. He had a couple, you know, really nice plays, a couple plays where it's like, maybe he's not quite in the right place. Felton was out there. He made a little bit of an impact too. A couple deep shots that almost connected. So you can see maybe that getting better every week as it goes on. And then DTR, you know, I just can't say enough about DTR. He still is good for a kind of a bad turnover, throughout the game. I mean, in this game, he kind of tossed a pass. They were trying to set up a screen. They were getting pressured, and he let one go. And it kind of was in a pack of a crowd that were kind of reading the screen, turned into an interception. You know, to their credit, I think the Bruin defense ended up holding on that one. That was the one that at the beginning of the first half, or at the beginning of the second half, right, where Colorado drove down and then missed that very short field goal. Bill Shirley called that missed field goal, by the way, which is good. But DTR is just doing what he needs to do. It hasn't even been like the flashiest bit of work, but he's getting back there and he's making decisions, and for the most part he's making good decisions, and when he has to use his feet, he's doing it. And I just think it's a really, you know, we're really seeing him kind of come into his own, which is what the Bruins need. Because even though they can rely on Josh Kelly as the rock back there, DTR has got to be the guy making those good decisions, and I think he is. Now, my only concern comes You know, they have the bye week, and then they head to Rice-Eccles in Salt Lake City to play the Utes. And I was talking to Bill about this in the stands. It's like DTR, I think, looks pretty good, but there's so many plays the last couple of weeks where he's gotten the ball, dropped back, and he's looking for a pass, and he's kind of shuffling his feet back there, and he's kind of extending plays with his feet, moving around a little bit, and he's got a lot of time. And he's making that time for himself by moving around in the pocket. However, he's been doing that against teams that aren't exactly defensive powerhouses. When you talk about Colorado and last week's game against Arizona State, Sparky's not horrible, but they haven't been exactly great this year, especially when you're talking about going and taking on a top 10 team in Utah. Utah will be by far, you know, hands down, far and away, the best defense the Bruins have faced. And I'm just concerned that, that if DTR doesn't try to maybe make decisions a little bit more quickly, I don't think he's going to have the ability to, you know, either some of those plays aren't going to be there for him against the Utes like they will be against the other teams they face on their schedule, even against Cal, which, you know, I just think the Utes are just, you know, kind of next level. So we'll see what kind of wrinkles Kelly puts in against the Utes, whether it is something where, you know, things are a little more, trying to be a little more quick hitting or quicker developing, or limiting the amount that DTR does try to you know, scramble and run, although he is going to have an effect on the game. They can't, you know, turn themselves into a one-dimensional team, but maybe making decisions a little more quickly, I guess, as opposed to waiting for those longer down the field plays to develop, or trying to get just a little bit more, just kind of settle for a little bit less and try to chunk down the field. And I really do think the best plan the Bruins have for the Utes, they want to make a game of it and give themselves a chance to win, is to try to duplicate what they did against Arizona State, and that is just to try to control the ball, because you know the Utes are going to try to do that. So win that battle. Just right there, you're going to put the Utes in an uncomfortable situation if you can do that. And of course, you're going to take your shots, but take your shots after, you know, establishing yourself, getting, you know, being able to kind of drive down the field. If they can drive down the field, then they're going to be in good shape. That's the question. Nobody thinks they're going to be able to drive down the field. But theoretically, the way the Bruins have been playing this year, they're going to be able to put themselves in a situation where they are in the game against Utah if they play the way they have the last few weeks. Now, whether that turns into a victory, you know, who knows? But at the very least, you don't want them stomping out into, you know, going to Salt Lake City and having one of those things that's happened so many times. It feels like Rice-Eccles. I know the Bruins have won in Rice-Eccles a few times over the years, but those have always been more of the akin to the, like, the flukier wins where, you know, the entire Utah lineup is injured or something like that. And of course, you know, Utah is known to bring a guy out of retirement to run for 700 yards on the Bruins too. So just weird thing happens in that place. And usually the weirdness is not in the Bruins' favor. Just, you know, you just remember so many years where they went out there and, you know, just flattened in a shutout or something. So, you know, nobody wants to see that. But the way that they're playing right now, I do believe that they will have a fighting chance in that game. And I think, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing it because I really think that this is a team that's coming in there now. At the very least, what you can say about them is they've developed some confidence. They've developed a little bit of an identity. They kind of know what they want to do. The defense has not played better the entire year, right? I mean, you know, this is the peak of where they're at. So if you're going to face your toughest opponent in a year, this is how you'd want to be playing. I mean, at the very least, they're peaking, and that's the thing you say in the Bruins' favor. Now, you know, whether that amounts to a win or, you know, like a close loss, we'll see what the Bruins do. But the one thing you don't want them to do is, and, you know, I really hope this doesn't happen, is go out to Utah, get stomped, and have all of the positive kind of vibes around this team kind of vanish with that. And I think that doesn't happen if they're in a relatively close game with them, if they have a decent showing. But I think that they do get just curb stomped, you know, a la the Trojans, you know, getting beat by Oregon this weekend, then yeah, I mean, that's something that's certainly not going to go over well. Speaking of that Oregon-USC game, I can't wait to hear what my friends over at Rain of Troy have to say about that. I have their CarCast queued up, and I'm going to listen to it on my way back from Palmdale probably. But the one funny thing I heard when I was driving to the Rose Bowl, you know, when I got into the car, SC was up 10-0. I'm like, oh, well, shit, man. Jordan's going to make a deal out of this. And, you know, I got in the car and turned on the radio. I think SC's on 790 now, if I remember right. They switched from 710. But anyway, so I turned it on, and of course, old Pete Arbogast is waxing eternal there, talking about the Trojans, and he sounded very, very confident, up 10-0, but very quickly it became 10-7 as Oregon drove down the field. And I just laughing because Pete said something to the camera. This is not a direct quote, but he said something like, "Well, you know, when the Trojans came into this game and they knew that Utah had already come back to beat Washington, you had to suspect that maybe the Pac-12 officials would be looking to give this one to the Oregon Ducks to preserve that matchup, you know, and for the Pac-12 championship game." So RBS basically intimating that, you know, the fix was in. I'm glad it wasn't a close game so that, you know, that he could keep that believing. I think Oregon left no doubt, if you would, as to who the better team was between the Ducks and the Trojans. And, you know, I really think that there's not too many. I mean, certainly the Trojan fans were at the Coliseum, were very upset with the performance. They don't want to see their team get beat like that. But, I mean, every Trojan that I know other than the Reign of Troy folks, they, you know, of course they're upset about that performance, but you know, I was getting texts from some of my Trojan buddies, and they're just like, "Oh, this is finally it. We finally get rid of Clay Helton and all that stuff." So, you know, this is one of those rare weekends where there's a Bruin win, a Trojan loss, and pretty much everybody's happy, right? Because even the Trojan fans want to see the final nails in the coffin of Helton. If anything, I just hope they don't fire him until, you know, after the season or whatever. Who knows when it's going to happen. But I'm real curious to see what that Trojan-UCLA game will be like, especially, you know, thinking about the Bruins are going to be coming off of, you know, this tough game against Utah. What shape are they going to be in? Hopefully they can make it through there intact. That's the other thing about the Utah game, is that DTR needs to make up his mind a little quicker, just because he can't take, you know, once again against Colorado. Sorry, I'm a little rambling here. But he had another, you know, he's good for like one bad turnover per game, and he's good for one play where he tries to make something out of nothing and he just can't quite get out of the pocket, and he, you know, runs backward and gets taken down. That happened to him late against the Buffs this game again. And I just think that, you know, Utah is going to, you know, be able to manufacture those plays at a higher rate. So DTR's got to watch his step. Although, like I said, can't say enough nice things about DTR. He's been very, very good in this last stretch. He's done nothing but get better from the point of the season, you know, where they started, where he was just, you know, game killing. And he has turned into, you know, him and Josh Kelly are certainly the strength of the offense and getting better every week, it seems like. So, yeah. But, yeah, make up your mind a little quicker against the Utes there, DTR. So, anywho, Bruins now 4-5. Taking on the Utes to possibly get to 500. You have to assume that they're probably not going to get that done, so they'll be 4-6. And then they have the last two-game stretch against their, you know, the crosstown rival, and then the UC rival, the Trojans and the Bears, to try to get to 500. And, you know, wouldn't that be something if the Bruins could spin it all the way around, going 1-5, and then going 5-1, weird symmetry bookend of the season. But I think that's really got to be, you know, if you're a realistic Bruin fan, that's probably got to be what you have your sights set on, and imminently doable, you know, at this point. You know, why the hell not? I think if you take these last three games, and you come to no other conclusion, then they probably should win 2 out of 3, looking at how the competition has been doing. And if that's the case, you get to 6 wins, you get yourself to a bowl game, and hopefully you get into a nice matchup where you can, you know, you win that bowl game, and you know, you go into the next season with hopefully nothing but feel-good thoughts. Certainly, I think Bruin fans will still be kind of like, well, here we go again. Let's hopefully not open up the season 0-4 again for the, you know, the third consecutive year. But you have to look at that, you know, that 2020 schedule as being the schedule that was very Bruin-friendly. And you could come back with a little bit of confidence, a little bit of swagger over the summer and really think some positive thoughts. And really, you know, the last thing, I know we're going to talk about this on the big show too, but when you look at how the Bruins started this year and you look at how the Bruins started last year, and it is just so frustrating and just so hard to make excuse after excuse after excuse. But now, you know, in hindsight, and you say, well, last year, Chip Kelly taking over, you know, and everybody thought it was going to be this big explosion of, you know, Chip Kelly taking over and they're going to get off to a hot start, and it was anything but that. But then you look back after they started to improve later in the year, and you're like, well, okay, you know, all the guys who left the team who, you know, either left because they didn't like Kelly or left because Kelly didn't like them. And then you talk about the suspensions, like with Boss Tagaloa and some of the other injury situations they had early in the year. You're like, okay, well, you know, it all makes sense because when it started to click, when it started to click halfway through the year, then they looked pretty darn good, at least on offense, you know, and the spate, the injuries and all that stuff. And then this year, you reset, and everybody was thinking they're going to get off and be able to make something out of it because, you know, even though they're playing a tough schedule, you know, you figured they'd be able to beat Cincinnati. You figured they'd be able to beat San Diego State, for Christ's sakes. And they didn't. They lost both those games, and it looked horrible and just got worse, getting all the way to what, 1-4 and 1-5 or whatever. But now that you look back and you say, well, Josh Kelly clearly was not healthy enough to contribute early in the season. And you look at Darnay Holmes clearly wasn't healthy enough to contribute early in the season. I mean, I know on the What's Bruin show, and I know on the broadcast, I know on the B team as well, I think there was speculation about what happened to Darnay Holmes. Did he just forget how to play? Did Chip Kelly ruin him? And I'm like, no, obviously it looks like, well, he was injured, and now he's not. And now he's locking up Laviska Shenault and holding him down to 3 for 16 yards or whatever. You know, so there are, you know, it's not good to, you know, the excuses don't work. They still should have won at least a couple of those games, I think. You know, the Arizona game, the San Diego State game, I don't think there's any excuse for them losing those games. However, when you look back and say, well, how the hell were they so terrible early in the year, and how the hell are they so looking like they're pretty good now? And you'd have to say, well, I guess those are legitimate explanations for it, right? You know, the Darnay Holmes, the Josh Kelly, DTR having his head spinning around, you know, like he's in The Exorcist or something, early in the year, and then finally settling down into a groove. All those things. And then you look at, and then I even talk about the offensive line, those issues with the, taking, we thought that was going to be a point of strength going into the season, and it turned out with the injuries and you know, the departures, that turned out to be something that had to be kind of scrapped and rebuilt. So, look, not excuses, but certainly reasons why they were struggling early. And hopefully they can, you know, for the few lucky breaks they got early in the season, you know, I think the only luck they had was the turnaround that got them that one win against Washington State. And now it seems like they've gotten a few fortunate bounces here in the, you know, the kind of the second third of the season, or the beginning of the second half of the season, I should say. As you know, we talked about, you know, they got some breaks against Arizona State. The ball bounced their way. They got the breaks against Stanford with, you know, playing a non-competitive quarterback. And now they kind of were able to take advantage of Colorado as well. They kind of made their own luck against Colorado, I think, and then were able to settle in and just kind of win a nice easy game. And we'll take it. So, look. You know, I guess that's all I got. I do have a couple calls I want to play, and we'll see what they have to say. Of course, you want to call the What's Bruin hotline. That is 805-399-4WBS, Sacramento, Troy. All right, here we go.
Yo, I'm at the Wolf Bowl right now. We're up 17-0. Let's go. I toasted defeat Colorado tonight. It's really great to hear that fucking DTR is playing. I wonder, how do you guys think we'd be doing if DTR wasn't starting? And if it was the burden guy, I feel like he would not be doing this well. DTR has really come up to his potential, I think. He's doing really well. And I'm glad to see him playing well out against Colorado. I hope we get the win tonight. Go Bruin. Awesome, awesome.
Thanks for the call. You know, and of course, you know, Bill and me and Mike aren't the only ones who can curse on the podcast. Feel free. You know, I'm not worried about, I'm not like the B team. I'm not going to bleep you. Do what you do, if that's what you do. But yeah, you know, that's one of the arguments I was having with Bill a couple weeks ago about, you know, should they bench DTR and go with Austin Burton. And I just think there's no question about the fact that DTR has, you know, a much higher ceiling than Burton does, and certainly shown us the low floor he could have. But I think that the way DTR's improved from the beginning of the year all the way up until now, I don't think there's anything you can say. But, you know, he is he's the guy for the Bruins. And Chip Kelly, to his credit, has never wavered on that. And I'm glad that DTR is having a chance to kind of, you know, they had kind of the summer sort of the summer tour of him talking about, you know, he's going to shut out the distractions and all that stuff. And, you know, I can't remember what the hashtag was he had at the beginning of the season, but certainly, you know, coming out at the beginning of the year, it didn't seem like that was going his way. And I'm very glad that he's got to turn around and really just go out and play and let all the, you know, the outside noise kind of take care of itself. But I think he's in a good spot now. So yeah, here's the last call.
Yusei did it, and I'm not surprised. I believed in them. Chip Kelly is doing what they got to do. And the entire time, they were holding it down. Look at the defense. Their defense has improved. Their offense, Joshua Kelly, DTR, they're looking more comfortable, more confident. I don't know. I called last weekend. I'm calling this weekend. I'm stoked on them. I know it's not Jim Moore's style. It's Chip Kelly, and he's like an intellectual, methodical type of coach. So once you accept that, to the layman people that have never coached, have never been an offensive coordinator, and can kind of see as a pundit, like, okay, what they can do, what they can't do as a viewer, right? You see what they're doing now? We love it because they're winning now. So what I think everyone on the UCLA bandwagon now should feel like is this, is that it's all there. It's a matter of execution, like I said, last game. And it's a matter of them holding the ball, moving the rock, and being a thorough defense. The defense wins the game, and they shut down Colorado. And I hope, and I know they can do that with any game they want to do. It's a matter of them believing in themselves and doing it. What's brewing? I love listening to your podcast. Everybody in there, Jake, Mike, Bill, the whole squad. It's always been quirky, fun, cool. I'm a late Bruin in there, but I'm kind of meandering now. But you guys are awesome, and keep it up. And I always look forward to Tuesday, Wednesday, the whole nine, the whole podcast. Hey, go Bruins.
Oh, that's got to be one of my favorite calls ever. Good job. You know, you had 2 minutes. It was a long call, but done the good stuff there, especially the praise for the Bruin show at the end. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, it's funny. Early in the season, you're talking about everybody was vilifying Chip Kelly or not believing in what he had to do, and certainly there was a lot of reason for that. I mean, obviously, you know, you start two seasons the way that he started, and then you are as petulant with the media as he is, and you just, you know, you kind of leave no alternative as far as to why things are going wrong. You know, it's very, very, very frustrating. But at the same time, the whole reason you hired this guy is because of the success he's had in the past, the vision he's had in the past, and his ability to, you know, just coach a team well. And, you know, the different criticisms of all of the coaches the Bruins have had all the way going back all the way to Terry Donahue, and even criticism about Terry Donahue, for goodness sakes, even though he had he operated a what turned out to be a rock solid program for, you know, 20 years or however long. The Bruins, you know, have lacked not had that legit, just absolute, knows what he's doing, knows how to build a program sort of head coach. And, you know, that's why he brought Kelly in, to do what he does, not to do everything very conventionally, because that's not what he is. And look, there's still a chance that this could fail miserably. I mean, they could lose the last three games and everybody's back to, oh, geez, you know, this is the terrible experiment and it's failed. But when this hire happened, the only people that said it was a bad hire, people that didn't know what they were talking about, or people that had a bunch of sour grapes. And I know we were talking about earlier in the year about, you know, should Chip Kelly change this or change that or change the other thing. And I know I was firmly saying that whatever he does, he should stick with whatever he thinks is going to work. And either he 100% fails, or he flips it around and now he's winning because of what his vision was. And I believe that because, you know, I still kind of believed in what Chip Kelly was supposed to be all about. And I figured if he truly was washed up, then at the very least, if he goes down with the ship at UCLA, then I either want him to succeed at UCLA or kind of be unhireable. And I can kind of still going to believe that, if that makes any sense. But no, I'm glad that he, you know, I think that you look at the Bruin coaches of the last few years, whether it was Mora, whether it was Neuheisel, you know, they really started to lose control of their program when they started making all these twisting and turns as far as the direction of the program with what they're going to do, making these wholesale changes to what they think was going to work. And, you know, whether it was going to the pistol or Neuheisel, maybe ahead of his time, whether it was, you know, trying to go back to a, you know, pro-style offense, you know, under Mora to kowtow to Josh Rosen coming in instead of just going with what had worked, you know, it's funny. Neuheisel was ahead of his time and Mora was retreating to the past. But both of them going against what, you know, what they initially want to do and failing miserably or just kind of losing a grasp on what they had going. I don't know if that's, you know, completely fair to say, but all I know is that I'm glad Kelly kind of stuck to what his guns are and so we could see if this idea he has, which is wholly unconventional, is going to work. And of course, the jury's still out on that too because, you know, even though they are starting to get results with the guys they have, then you have all the skepticism going to, you know, their recruiting model and all that. And that's a whole nother can of worms that we can speculate endlessly on over the summer. Especially when you look at, you know, depending on, you know, now that Helton is most likely, almost certainly going to be fired, they still don't know who their head coach is going to be across town. But you would imagine it's going to be somebody who can, you know, even if it's not Urban Meyer, it's going to be somebody who is going to be able to recruit as USC traditionally recruits. And so I think it's important that UCLA, you know, this is kind of like the test for that. You know, can UCLA with a good head coach doing the things that he wants to do, spin this around and be successful in a landscape where USC is also set up to be successful? You know, and hey, there's room for two programs in town, and I'm looking forward to it. And I think that's hopefully where we're headed. And the Crosstown Pod will be a fun thing. So a bunch of people complain about how horrible things are with their football teams. Maybe we can celebrate some goodness with that. All right. Well, I've rambled on too long. My kid's about to start playing. And I'm going to go see if I can get maybe Rachel Garcia or Bubba Nichols to give me an ID for the What's Brewing show. No promises, but we'll see. I don't know. Anywho, guys, your thoughts. 805-309-4WBS. Sucker Rain of Troy. Tweet us some questions, whatever, for Tuesday. What do you think about this team? What do you think about their prospects going to Utah? What do you think about their prospects going to the bowl game? What do you think in general? Period. End of story. Go Bruins.
Good evening.
Try us tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
It's got to be in or out, Mom. In or out. Well, I need the door closed.
Size doesn't necessarily matter if you want it hard enough.
Thank you for your cooperation.
The final word is boob.